Thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I am Judy Steinig, Director of Community Programs for the Orthodox Union, and it is an honor to host and coordinate this program. The OU created SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as a virtual program. The OU recognizes that when baby boomers retire, they're looking for educational stimulation, and SPIRIT aims to provide active retirees, not yet retirees, empty nesters, baby boomers, sandwich generation parents, and seniors with opportunities for spiritual education and intellectual growth. As soon as the OU became aware of the challenges being encountered by the over 60 population with regard to coronavirus, it was realized that SPIRIT would be the perfect way to engage our retirees in a virtual setting. We are privileged to welcome back Dr. Disa Berger of Lander College for Women to our SPIRIT program. Dr. Berger will be addressing All in the Family, Opportunities and Relationships in Family Dynamics. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And I'm sure you will enjoy the program. If you have any questions, please contact me at steinigj@ou.org. That's steinigj@ou.org. It's my pleasure and honor to turn the program over to Dr. Berger.
Okay. Okay, everybody. First of all, thank you very, very much to Representative Steinig for coordinating this and for really creating a program that I think is a tremendous opportunity for the community. The topic that I'm going to talk about today is kind of a timeless topic, but I think it's a topic that actually has that much more importance given the current circumstances. Relationships are the bread and butter of our existence. When Hashem made Adam, he said, Lo tov heyos ha'adam levado, and he went right ahead and made Chava, because it's not good for people to be alone. And right now, given the stay-at-home, shelter-in-place orders, many of us are actually finding ourselves in very, very unusual circumstances, either alone by ourselves in homes, or limited to very, very few people that we can actually physically interact with. And that's actually very, very hard. And there's already a lot of, I would say, review of literature in terms of the studies that have been done on the impact of the situation. And there really is a very differential impact. There are people who are thriving. There are families that are doing super well together, to the extent that I've already seen articles about how am I ever going to go back to the way I used to live. The opposite is also true. We're dealing with a reality where people living in close quarters under strained circumstances are not thriving, and problems that existed beforehand are getting exacerbated. And sometimes there are new problems that people were not facing beforehand. So what I'm hoping to do over the course of the next little while is talk about the opportunities as well as the challenges and how we can turn some of those challenges into opportunities for strengthening and enhancing our relationships with our families. Okay, now, this is the current reality. Without any judgment, positive or negative, I think we can look at these things and really say they're true. We are staying at home. That's the shelter in place order. There's less travel. I think recently I saw a statistic that 95% of flights in and out of Kennedy Airport have been canceled. We have more time together. For those of us who are with other people, those of us who are blessed to be with others in our shelter in place, have a lot more time with the other people than we normally had. And that allows for more time to think because we're not traveling, we're not commuting. We have an opportunity to recognize our own independence as well as our interdependence. And what we are seeing are tremendous acts of kindness and caring within the community. Now I want to look at the same factors again. And I want to look at them this time just because people are having very, very different experiences. For those who are staying at home, the stay-at-home order is extremely difficult. Thank God we are blessed to live in an age where technology allows for virtual communication, because I really do think that if people didn't have the opportunity to see people, it would be absolutely awful. And I think that there are people who, thank God, live in communities where neighbors check in on them, or they check in on neighbors, or they go outside in a safe and healthy way, see other people. They're doing themselves a tremendous favor, particularly if they are living home by themselves. There are those for whom staying at home, as I said before, has been an opportunity to really strengthen the relationships within the family. And there are people who are actually enjoying that. There are also people, and I said this before, who are really suffering. And they're suffering as a result of the fact that there's no place to go. And they are with people that they don't necessarily get along as well with as they would like. There's less travel. So less travel has all kinds of different impact. So for those who commute, that's extra time. It doesn't only have impact on us as human beings, it actually has had impact on nature. There's a serious reduction in pollution. I recently saw a meme where somebody was questioning how many days other people are getting to the mile of gas, to a gallon of gas, because they were getting about 3 days to each gallon. People are really not traveling. There is less pollution, and that really has impacted on the realities of the world. The smog over Los Angeles has cleared. The snow-capped mountains of Himalayas are apparently visible from parts of northern India for the first time anybody can remember. There are all kinds of cute pictures on the internet of animals actually roaming the streets in different places because of the limit in terms of the pollution and the travel that people engage in. The more time together is certainly something that can go both ways. More time together, when it's constructive and productive, can be wonderful. But the reality is that husbands and wives and others are not supposed to spend their entire day together. Before this happened, on average, husbands and wives were spending about 150 minutes a day. That's 2.5 hours with each other. Husbands and wives were able to genuinely ask each other, how was your day? And it was a real question, because other things happened that they weren't privy to. And the reality now is that people are spending a lot more time together, and that can prove to be very, very challenging. There's more time to think. I think that many of us recognize now that we very much were in do mode, and we were rushing and we were running, and kind of having time to think and plan and invest in the values that we really respect can be absolutely wonderful. Having time to think can also lead to rumination on the negative things. And that's something that we want to really look at. Recognizing our own independence and interdependence. When I spoke for Spirit before Pesach, one of the big fears was, how would people manage if they had to make a Seder by themselves? How would couples who are used to hosting dozens of children and grandchildren manage with the reality of making a Seder by themselves? And what was actually very interesting post-Pesach, and I certainly can't say that this is universal, because I am sure that people really did have a hard time with this, but a lot of people were able to look back and really say, I managed to enjoy that Seder. I was really proud of myself. So recognizing our own independence can be a tremendous thing. Recognizing our own interdependence, how much we do need others, how much we need to interact with others, and how much we rely on others can be both humbling as well as a source of, tremendous strength, because we really are part of a community. And with that, that brings us to the last one on the slide. We really have been seeing tremendous acts of kindness and caring, chesed, within the community. And the community has risen to levels post-Pesach in my neighborhood. They set up, Pesach ended on a Thursday night. They were very concerned that the flooding of the supermarkets could, chas v'shalom, be extremely dangerous. So what they did was they had a COVID market where they had people place orders and they lined up in cars and the orders were put into their trunks and they reduced fees. It was a tremendous, tremendous chesed. And that chesed is only one small, and it's not small, one drop in the sea of that. But nobody likes to be the recipient of chesed. And I think the reality where people are more likely to be at home for a longer amount of time makes people scared of how long am I going to be on the receiving end. I like on the giving end. And we'll talk about that we can be on the giving end even if we're also on the receiving end. Okay. So now upside. There is an indication that families are finding opportunities to forge stronger bonds. That's tremendous. That's really wonderful. For those whom it's working, they have more time for family. I look out the window, I have a young family across the street from me. The mother is playing with the kids in the street every sunny day. It's a really beautiful thing to see. People are benefiting from not having to commute to work. We're seeing the chesed, we're seeing all kinds of different things that the community has been able to do for its members, and it really is tremendous. I think for many, it's also an opportunity to develop a new understanding and appreciation and respect for members of our family. I've heard people talk about the fact that, hey, I never knew what my husband or wife really did at work. And I pass by and I hear them interacting in a way that I'm actually really impressed with because they don't see their spouse in that light. I think that the reality of the interdependence that we have with our family members can lead to a greater appreciation for all the things that people do for each other. So that's the upside. But the other side is also unfortunately true. If you look at these two quotes, these are quotes from the recent past. One is from March and one is from April. There are real concerns in terms of the negative impact. In China, when they opened some of the quarantine areas, there were many, many more filings for divorce than there were during that same time period the year before. The reality is that we're seeing similar trends in America. Matrimonial lawyers are reporting that they are getting calls on a fairly regular basis. And the question really is, what can be done? What is going on here that can make a difference in this? Now, one of the realities is a financial reality. One of the big things that couples tend to bicker about is how to spend money. And the reality is that many in the community do not have the resources that they're used to. And at this point, do not have the ability to have access to those resources. And undoubtedly, that is causing stress. And one of the big questions we want people who are having a hard time to ask each other is the difficulty that I'm having with my spouse a result of what's going on now with COVID-19? Or is the difficulty a reality that kind of had been buried because we were all busy engaging in all kinds of different things, and it's been exacerbated and become much more evident in the fact that we are living together and seeing each other all the time. Okay, with that, it is actually never a good idea for people to make decisions under stress. And it is a serious reality that if people are under stress, there are people that they can and should be reaching out to get support, because we don't want the reality to turn in this direction if it doesn't have to. Now, let's talk about how we can end up like the first slide, where people are making it work and actually thriving and benefiting from being together, despite the unnatural and limiting circumstances. So the first thing that I want to look at is being kind to ourselves, right? We talk about v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. That's based on the premise of self-love. I need to be kind to myself. I need to be flexible. I need to be self-forgiving. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken with who had all of these lofty goals when we first entered the quarantine and weren't able to accomplish them. And there are some who are being very, very hard on themselves and feeling bad that they haven't redone their kitchen and learned half of Shas. And the understanding has to be, I need to be kind to myself. I need to be flexible to myself. I need to allow myself to sleep a little bit later on the days that I need to sleep a little bit later. And I need to do the same for my partner. The same way as I want to be kind for myself, I want them to be the beneficiary of my dan l'kafschus. I don't want to be jumping to conclusions, and I want to display kindness. I want to find out what makes them happy, and I want to work towards that. Okay, working through difficult things, that's hard. And I do think that the daily grind of going back and forth to work sometimes actually prevents us from tackling some of those difficult things. And now when we have them, we do have an opportunity to make things even better if we deal with it the right way. We're going to talk about displaying vulnerability and not anger when we get to another slide later on, but I think that that's extremely important. When something is hard for a person, when something is hard for you, we need to verbalize it that way. We don't want to get angry at someone else for not meeting expectations that we had that we may not have communicated. Flexibility, you're going to see that word multiple times on these slides. Like these are her roles and these are his roles. That's really not the way things are going to work. The understanding of what's going to work for us is how things are going to work. The understanding of, in general, I do these things, but I really would like it if you would help me with them, is what's going to work. The understanding of, usually we do the dishes at night, but I'm really too tired and I'll do them tomorrow morning. That's going to work for me to be flexible with myself and for me to be flexible with my spouse. The next one is of extreme importance. Remember before I said that on average, couples spend about 150 minutes a day together. When people are sheltering in place and they have just the two of them, just each other, the reality is that they're spending a heck of a lot more time than that. And understandably, it is very important to create space for alone time and together time. Each partner needs to have the opportunity to pursue their own interests, to talk on the phone to a friend. These are all things that need to happen. And we want to make sure that as much as we want people to benefit from being with each other, they also benefit from being with themselves. Okay. Sharing in the workload is something that I mentioned before, but it's very, very important, particularly now when people are staying at home and the workload actually could have increased. You know, for couples that use paper during the week because we're running off to work the next day and now we're using China, there are more dishes to wash. The fact is we're staying home, we might be cooking more elaborately, so there are more pots to wash. I'm not here to talk about cooking, but the reality is jobs that are done together don't feel as much like jobs. And when I know that I have someone else that I can rely on because they genuinely care about me and they don't want me to feel overwhelmed or overworked, I do much, much better. The next thing is very, very important. When people are together all the time, they might kind of just fall into a very basic routine. They get up in the morning, they get dressed, they daven, they eat breakfast. She goes on her computer, he goes on his computer. She prepares lunch, he talks to somebody, she talks to somebody, and they really might be overlooking a real opportunity, because the opportunity to do things that we enjoy with each other is tremendous. Relationships are forged through joint experiences. And we're going to talk about doing things jointly with people remotely as well. But if you have the blessing of having someone else in your house, think about what you can do with each other that you might both enjoy. We need to bring freshness to our relationships. We need to find new things. So whether it's taking some kind of art class online, whether it's going to a virtual museum, we'll talk about different ideas for activities a little bit later, do something that the two of you enjoy together. It doesn't have to be anything big. You can sit at the Shabbos table and sing an extra zemer. But if you enjoy it, do it. If you enjoy going for a walk or a drive, do it. Going for a walk, you should be doing, even if you don't particularly enjoy it, because we need the exercise and we need the fresh air. Okay, the next one, we have two slides devoted to that in a minute, but the next one is the foundation of any good relationship, and that's communication. None of us have teleprompters on our foreheads. I don't know what you're thinking, and I'm not supposed to. I do need to know it when it affects the way you want me to act and what you'd like me to do. So effective communication, being willing to ask for the things that we need, is extremely important in terms of making it work with whoever we are with. And finally, staying connected with others. Because yes, the couple who are in the house, that's a beautiful, wonderful relationship that we want to strengthen. But we also want to make sure that we're maintaining other relationships. We need other people, and other people need us. Even if they can't talk to us then, they really will appreciate the fact that somebody picked up the phone and thought about them and called. So, going back to what we said before on the previous slide about showing vulnerability as opposed to anger, I want to look at this slide for a minute. Anger is what we consider a secondary emotion, or what's considered by many as a secondary emotion. Anger often is the result of other feelings that we haven't resolved. So sometimes when somebody's nervous about something, they become angry at the person who hasn't necessarily done the thing, but they're worried that they might. Sometimes when somebody is overwhelmed, if somebody else doesn't offer the help, they can end up angry at somebody for absolutely no other reason than they were overwhelmed. The goal is us to be in touch with our feelings. And yes, it sounds like I'm a psychologist, I am, and I don't like sound too tacky that way, but the reality is like this. Very often there's something else underlying the anger. If I address that first, I can really promote a much healthier existence. So if I'm feeling overwhelmed because all of a sudden there are three extra things to do, and that can happen despite the fact that you're staying at home. You know, you were making supper, the pot of potatoes spilled on the floor. This happened to me last night. The reality was I still had to serve supper and I needed help cleaning up the pot of potatoes. And for that minute when it was like, how are we going to do this? I felt overwhelmed and I needed to tell myself that first, and then tell somebody else in the family so that they can reach out and help me. People are nervous now. People are worried. And there's reason for them to be nervous, and there's reason for them to be worried, and that can make them more irritable. Dealing with the nervousness, not that we talk about, you know, worries exclusively, but being able to say, I am worried, or I think about this, and this is what goes through my head. Being able to express how we're feeling can really prevent a display of anger that can actually really be very destructive in any relationship. So be in touch with your feelings, be comfortable expressing your feelings. I'm feeling lonely, I'm feeling insecure. I reached out to somebody, they didn't call me back. I applied for a job, I didn't hear back from it. Be able to say those things. I'm feeling sad, okay? Sadness is a very, very real feeling. People are feeling sad now because they've lost loved ones. People are feeling sad now because they're feeling very, very limited. You need to address those feelings because otherwise they really can morph into a secondary emotion, which is not a pretty secondary emotion. The quote on the bottom is from Eckhart Tolle, where there is anger, there's always pain underneath. So this is the anger iceberg, okay? And the anger iceberg really shows us how much can be under what doesn't look like so much. So it looks like somebody's upset because the potato is spilled, but the reality is they're upset because of other things that if they would have addressed beforehand, may have felt a lot more comfortable. Okay, so let's talk about effective communication, okay? I said before, we don't have teleprompters on our foreheads. Nobody can read my mind, and actually one of the problems in communication is that we often do engage in mind reading. I really need to remind myself that I am genuinely interested in what the other person wants, needs, and wants to say, okay? That's the first and foremost part of communication. I care about the other. That's the v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. This is the l'reacha part, okay? We have to listen, and we have to say to ourselves, what is it that they're asking? And then ask them, am I understanding correctly if it's something more complex? We have to be able to really be present for that person. A healthy relationship is a display of mutual support and patience. Sometimes when something is hard to talk about, it's hard to talk about. And it takes a while for somebody to put it on the table. And saying to somebody, we don't have to discuss it, but it does look like something's bothering you and I'm here for you, is tremendously beneficial. Being able to say to somebody, I am here, but not prying their mouths open, not forcing them to say anything they're not ready to say, is very, very important. The next one in terms of communication is also extremely important. We all have our strengths. Some of us are more outgoing, some of us are shyer. There are times where our strengths are extremely beneficial for a whole bunch of other people and we need to use them. But we also need to know when not to use them. And that requires attunement. I need to know when it's not a good time for me to tell a joke. I need to know when it is a good time for me to sit down next to somebody who looks like they're having a hard time, and when it is a good time for me to kind of take a step back. That's attunement. I have to also be able to modulate my behavior. And modulating my behavior doesn't mean that I squelch the things that I'm good at. It means that right now might not be the time for. Okay, the next piece in effective communication has to do with the lack of that teleprompter, and that's don't be scared to assert yourself. You know, the New York City subway line is something, say something. You probably haven't seen any lines in the New York City subway, neither have I in a long time. But don't be scared to assert yourself. If you need something or you want something or something is bothering you, the person that you can reach out to, whether it's a person in your house or a person who's not in your house that you think really can understand, is extremely important. Now, when we need someone else to address something in their behavior, or we need them to, you know, understand something that we need, using a positive frame is extremely helpful. When we catch somebody being good and we say, I really appreciate that, the likelihood of them doing it again goes up. And that's something that's extremely important for us to remember. I really like it when is a very important thing for us to be able to say, or I saw that you were really trying to, you know, not talk in the kitchen while I was working. And that's also a very, very important thing for us to be able to say. But that positive frame makes the listener much more open to hear what we have to say. Okay. With that, I want to look at something else. Communication that strengthens relationships. There are different forms of communication, but when something goes wrong, most of us don't have a problem being there for somebody else. The question is, can we really be there when things go right? And the understanding is that there are a few forms of communication that really make relationships stronger, and strong relationships strengthen our ability to be resilient and to handle things. Knowing that I have somebody who genuinely cares, who I'm genuinely connected to, allows me to handle things, I know we're not supposed to touch our faces, allows me to handle things that are more challenging. Okay, so let's look at these different forms of communication. The two forms of communication that I left off are what we call passive destructive and active destructive. And those two forms of communication, when things go right, putting somebody down, we don't have to even talk about them. But I do want us to talk about the other two forms of communication, both of which we probably engage in, and one of which we probably want to increase while we'd like to decrease the other. The one I want to start with is the one on the bottom, and that's passive constructive. Your husband comes into the room and says, I have fantastic news. Okay, and you're kind of sitting there distracted like this, you know, looking at the cell phone. I'm not picking up my cell phone to look at it. I'm picking it up for demonstration purposes. And you say, really what? Right? You're saying the right things, but your body language and your eye contact are lacking. And the fact that you're saying really what doesn't necessarily make someone want to really share the what that they came in with the I have really great news. Okay? That can be more of a conversation killer. The person answers, they answer curtly, they answer shortly, they're saying the right things, but they're not fully present. They're not oriented toward you. They're not they're not reflecting in their voice and in their tone and in their eye contact. And even worse, they might be engaged in something that, you know, doesn't seem to be a big deal to them, but really could be a big deal to you. And that's called the conversation killer. That's a passive, constructive way of responding to good news. And being there for people when things go right is extremely important. It's as important as being able to be there for people when things go wrong. The other passive, constructive way of kind of ruining a conversation is what we call being a conversation hijacker. Okay? Being a conversation hijacker means you come over and you share, I have fantastic news. I just got accepted to X, Y, or Z. And I say, really? I got accepted to A, B, and C. And you know, I was really happy that I got accepted to A, B, and C. So you came to share something with me. And it's going to be appropriate at some point for me to share with you also. But my job is to be there with you, to be where you're at in terms of the emotion that you're expressing. And it's extremely important that you are able to recognize that. So let's look at the positive side. And that's an active, constructive response. When somebody shares something positive, whether it's someone who you are sheltering in place with, whether it's a friend on the phone, whether it's somebody on Zoom, and I think it is actually interesting because on the positive side of Zoom, I have heard that certain students are actually more engaged because the distractions are somewhat limited and they're just focused on the computer. So when people communicate this way, it is very possible that they feel a little bit more focused. But the active, constructive way of responding, where you are authentic and you are genuinely happy for the other person, and you are reflecting the emotions that they're displaying, makes you into what we call a joy multiplier. They walk away happier now that they've shared, and you walk away happier because you're genuinely happy for that other person. And I can't stress this enough. I'm talking about this both in terms of the relationships in the house as well as the relationships out of the house. These forms of communication can make a tremendous difference in enhancing a relationship. Okay, now going back to just a couple of other things, and this is not just for people you're in the house with, but I said before, we don't want things to get old. And when we are sheltering in place, we can kind of sometimes fall into routines. So these are just a couple of different ideas that people can do with each other. And with each other is actually really interesting now. I have a friend who was playing Boggle with people in three different countries because she was able to do that online. My kids often will run paint nights with each other. I shouldn't say often, but I do have a stack of paintings that has to get hung because of the fact that they did run paint nights. Paint nights can be fun for husbands and wives. Find a picture online and both of you make it and you can laugh a little bit. You can listen to music, you can learn a new song, you can teach a new song, you can have a kumsitz with the family on the computer. And that's a really nice idea. Cooking, right? For those people who enjoy cooking and for those people who might not be good at it but think they might enjoy it, the idea of having an Iron Chef style competition, whether it's just with the person in your house or whether it's with family members virtually, can be a lot of fun. And coming out laughing is always a good thing. Draw together, compare outcomes, exercise together. Exercising can take the form of walking in places where people are allowed to walk. And I think Baruch Hashem, right now, that's already most places, obviously with masks. But the reality is we need to exercise, but doing it with somebody else increases the benefit, okay? That's something that we call social facilitation. The presence of someone else enhances my desire to engage in that activity. So exercising together can be by watching a video on the computer and doing it with each other. It can be by having people in remote places watching the same video and doing it with each other. I actually had a very good time. One of my kids actually has a gym virtually. Or maybe they call it fitness. So I came into the room and she was lying on the floor. And one of my other children who's already a professional was actually lying on the floor with her and following along because people enjoy doing these things and they enjoy doing them together. Take photographs outside, enlarge one part, ask people in your family or elsewhere, what is this a piece of? Have scavenger hunts, virtual museums. You can go to the British Museum or the Israel Museum as easily as you can go to the Museum of Natural History. And many of them are really free online. I actually was in the British Museum and in the Israel Museum this week. And it is actually a lot of fun, especially if you do it with somebody else. And certainly learning and going to shiurim. Some couples learn very well with each other. Sometimes parents and children who are in remote places have the opportunity to learn together. With that being said, I want to go on to a much more sensitive topic. There are people who are sheltering in place who are assuming additional responsibility for a loved one due to the fact that they really don't have the caretakers or the extra support that they usually have. And that is something that can be extremely difficult. It can be challenging from a physical perspective, and it's certainly challenging from an emotional perspective. Because even if the reality was the same 3 months ago, the reality was much more easily shared with other people. So recognizing that, and if you have a friend or a relative or you yourself are dealing with things, there are a variety of different things that are recommended by the Alzheimer's Foundation to really make life that much easier. People do have reduced abilities to take breaks, and they need those breaks. And it is important for friends to call in and to check in with the caregiving individual, because those people really do have a hard time. For those who are giving care, right? Finding the things that work best, even if you do them over and over again, it's tremendous. But it's not just finding the things for the person that you're caring for, but finding the things that work best for you. What relaxes you? Do you enjoy the music? Can you put it on in the background? Can you put on a fan? Can you use different forms of air freshener that can make things feel that much more pleasant? If they work for you, use them. The other side of the coin is also very important. We need to identify our own triggers. We need to know what is it that makes us feel overwhelmed and that makes us get upset, that we can plan accordingly. We also need to identify the triggers for our loved one and be able to kind of see if we can plan to do things a little bit differently and maybe avoid. This is something I recommend across the board, but it's particularly helpful in these circumstances, and that's keeping a journal and including your successes. Journal writing should not be about, I had a really hard day exclusively. Journal writing should be about the, I had a really hard day, and the other side of the reality where I was also able to enjoy X, Y, or Z, and I spoke to A, B, and C. Include the successes in the journal. Because getting through the day in certain circumstances is an extreme success. Structure is extremely helpful, particularly for people who have intellectual disabilities and their caregivers who need to maintain that structure for them because they can't maintain it on their own. Coping skills, that was actually the theme of our last session. Coping skills are extremely important, whether it's the deep breathing or some mindful activities or listening to music or exercising a little bit more or engaging in imagery. Things that can help you feel that much better need to be done. And finally, and this is something that at this point people have probably or certainly realized, that even if you're alone physically with someone, that doesn't mean you have to feel like you're alone. And whether it's a family care meeting or reaching out to a professional in the community, do it. Because feeling like you're alone with a huge responsibility is tremendous. And I think that there are resources that we want to really make sure that we utilize. Okay, now let's go to the other side of this. Okay, relationships with grown children. It's actually interesting because, and I don't know if this applies to anyone in this group, but there are grown children who are now living at home with their parents after not having lived there for a number of years, given the nature of the reality. So I am primarily talking about children who live elsewhere, but right now I'm just talking about the theory. They say that friendship emerges along with the adults, and being able to develop and see that friendship and see the child that you raised become an adult is an area of tremendous nachas and enjoyment. It's a source of tremendous nachas and enjoyment. Okay, just 1 second. Okay. We have to realize that one of the things that emerging adults need and young adults need is the feeling of having their parents' emotional support. They need to have their parents' emotional support, and they need to have the understanding that their parents believe in them and that their parents see them as capable individuals. One of the things that can get in the way is an overwhelming desire to protect our children from harm. And that can lead us to give unsolicited advice. And that can be hard whether the conversation is happening face to face or whether the conversation is happening over the phone or over Zoom. The reality is no one likes unsolicited advice. You can ask permission. You can say, do you have suggestions for something? Or do you want me to share some thoughts that I have? But be prepared to read their response in terms of how quickly they respond. If they kind of like mumble an okay, but you know that that's not really what they want, then don't say it. I want to go back to the protecting children from harm. When I speak to parents of younger children, we talk about being good lifeguards, right? What does a good lifeguard do? A good lifeguard stands at the pool. They don't pull a child out the first time they see that they're flailing their arms. They are there to give that encouragement and that support and obviously provide the protection that they need. And that's what we did with our children as they were growing up. We didn't solve every problem for them. We kind of sent them a message that we believed in them so that they can solve their own problems. And that is even more important when we are dealing with children who are adults, who are living on their own, who are making decisions on their own, who are raising families on their own. They have to know that they can share things with us without fear of being critiqued. They have to know that they can share things with us without worrying that, oh no, they had a good idea, but you're gonna have a better one. Because that's not going to make the relationship healthier or more positive. So let's look at a couple of different ideas. And these are things that work in particular with adult children, but they also work more or less with all of our relatives and relationships. And the first thing is a respectful boundary. We need to respect the fact that they are their own individuals and they make their own choices. And once we respect that, we can forge a relationship despite the fact that certain things might be very different than we had hoped or than we had wanted. That's one form of respectful boundary, that be who they are. Another form of respectful boundary is respecting the fact that there are times that they might want to share and times that they don't want to share. And being savvy, tuning into when those things are not comfortable for them and doing that before they even have to say, you know, I'm not really comfortable talking about it. The reality is, they don't have teleprompters on their head for a good reason. They are entitled to share as they like. The third form of respectful boundary has to do with understanding that we want to communicate with them and they want to communicate with us, but we're not necessarily available at the same time. And respecting the fact that it's probably not a good idea if I call between the hours of 6 and 8 because they're busy giving supper and putting young children to sleep. It probably is something for me to consider that since all the kids are working on Zoom, they might not be available at 11 o'clock in the morning. And I have to be very comfortable with the understanding that if they can't get the phone or they say, I can't talk right now, that's really okay. That doesn't reflect on the relationship. It reflects on their reality, which brings me to probably the two most important ingredients in any relationship, which are forgiveness and flexibility. Okay. Being able to be self-forgiving and other-forgiving is extremely important. We all make mistakes. Our children make mistakes. They forget to call on our birthdays. We forget to call them on their birthdays. I don't know where there's a mitzvah in the Torah to call people on their birthdays. But the understanding is that just because somebody does something or doesn't do something doesn't mean that they meant it personally doesn't mean that they are in some way devaluing the relationship. So forgiveness, people make mistakes, and flexibility. I thought we were gonna meet at 11 o'clock. We can't meet at 11 o'clock. That 11 o'clock Zoom session didn't cost me anything to cancel. The reality is that flexibility is necessary in every healthy relationship, and particularly with relatives, and that's extremely important. Just a second. Primarily, what parents of adult children need to recognize is that they are there to provide emotional support. And emotional support means listening. Emotional support means being able to reflect the emotion that the person is displaying. It sounds like that was really hard, or you sound super excited about that, and encourage them to be themselves and to talk to the extent that they want to talk, and be okay with it when they don't want to talk. Now, going back to what we had a couple of slides ago, engaging in things that you both love together is a tremendous thing that needs to happen. It needs to happen with the people in our houses. It needs to happen with the relatives that we want to stay in touch with, if they can. The reality is that what did you do today is not as exciting a question as it sometimes was, okay? Because our lives are pretty routine with what we're doing. People aren't going places. They're not necessarily seeing new things. They might find an interesting article, and that's certainly something that you want to be able to share if the other person might be interested in it. But for the most part, we want to recognize the fact that we need to bring freshness into all of our relationships, and finding activities that you can do together can be tremendous. And again, going back to that list that I showed you before, and being creative and coming up with our own ideas, do them. It might feel unnatural. You know, you can order canvases online from Michaels and have that paint night. You can go into your cabinet and take out three ingredients and ask, you know, your kids if they have the same three ingredients. Do whatever you can do to bring a little bit of fun and positivity into the relationship. The last thing that's extremely important in relationships with grown children is having a positive relationship with the other people in their lives. If somebody means something to my child, I want them to know that I would like to be connected to them as well. And that's extremely, extremely important. Our children need our unconditional emotional support. And if there's somebody in their life who you might not have chosen as your friend to begin with, but your child chose them as your friend, they don't have to be your friend, but they do have to feel warm and welcomed, and they do have to feel that you are genuinely interested in making them happy. And that's really what this is about. Okay, finally, grandparenting from a distance. This is actually something that many, many people have had a lot of experience with. Many people have children who live all over the world. And I just found a couple of realities. The first is, as much as we love our grandchildren, they're not our kids. They're our kids' kids, and we have to observe the ground rules. And if we're not sure, we have to ask, right? Positively spoiling our grandchildren, as long as it's within our children's comfort zone, is fantastic. But ask if you're not sure, and ask out of earshot of that child. The child wants to do something. If you have any doubt that the parent might not approve, ask, and don't do it in front of that kid. Communication and through phones and FaceTime and Zoom are tremendous, because that keeps them in your life and it keeps you in their lives. And I think that one of the things that's actually very, very, very cute, my daughter is, I guess, an essential worker. So my granddaughter is at home. Two of my kids babysit for her over Zoom. And yes, her father is in the house and he's super present and wonderful, but the reality is they can communicate and have a good time and do things with her despite the fact that they really haven't spent any physical time together in a very long time. So doing activities together, it can be as simple as picking up a book and reading it to a grandchild. Now, you know, I'm using this share screen function. It not a hard function to use. There are plenty of books with pictures that are available online, but even if they can't see the book and you're just picking up the pages, you know, so that they can see the picture every couple of pages, it's a very, very good warm activity. And then last is planning an activity together, right? One of the things that we can do is we can make videos with each other. We can construct videos out of old pictures and put things together for times when in Ratzon Hashem we will be able to get together face to face, or so that we can watch things with each other. And many, many grandchildren will very much enjoy being the like technology guides and helping their grandparents put things together. It's really, really amazing how much technology kids are aware of at a young age. Okay, finally, I want to conclude with a story. It's a story that I saw in the biography of Rav Amital, and it's a story that really has resonated with me for a very long time. Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein were co-Rashi Yeshiva, and there wasn't a clear delineation of whose responsibility certain things were. They would make joint decisions. And the question was, how did that work? So there, in particular, one of the stories that's brought down in this biography is that when it came to furnishing the Beis Medrash, when they were building the yeshiva, they had a machlokas. People who we really like and get along well with don't always have the same ideas about things. Now, it wasn't a machlokas that was any problem, because what Rav Amital said is like this: the way we make decisions is that if we see that something is more important for the other one, that's the way we want to go. And that understanding, you know, helped decide that the Gush Beis Medrash was going to have tables as opposed to shtenders. The reality here is we want to care enough about the people that we are with, about the people that we care for, whether we are with them or not, to want to do the things that they want to do so that they can be happy. Okay. I thank you all for listening. I am davening, as all of you are, that in Ratzon Hashem we all get through this safely and that it ends quickly. And thank you, Rebbetzin Steinhoek, for doing this.
Dr. Berger, thank you so much. This was wonderful. You gave us a lot of, not just information, you gave us strategies, you gave us ideas to do. This was wonderful. I think everybody not only enjoyed it, but they just learned so much. We really appreciate your time and your effort and this beautiful PowerPoint. Everybody, try to implement some of these ideas in our relationships. We know that it's challenging now, but hopefully this will help us a lot. Thank you so much, everybody, and we will see you again on another Spirit program. Take care, Dr. Berger. Thank you.
Thank you very much.